Welcome to Iris Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Given the abundance of media available to children these days, most of it not necessarily suitable for certain ages, can kids access books and music that talks to them at their age level? Well, my guest today is a triple threat in the world of children's entertainment. Las Vegas-based Patrick Adams is an award-winning children's author, musician, and podcaster, and he'll be releasing his eighth album for kids and families called Imagination Time with Patrick on June 14th. For everything about Patrick, go to patrickadamsbooks.com. Follow him on Facebook, Instagram, and X. And Patrick, welcome to the show.
It is great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. How did you get into writing children's books and albums? Did you grow up in a creative environment to begin with? Or?
You know, my creative juices hit later in life. Back in 2015, I was on a sabbatical. I was in between jobs. I was doing a little bit of traveling. And I had this idea, kind of hit me for a children's book series about my three kids at the time.
Now up really, to five.
Yeah, with a sixth on the way.
Okay.
So my daughter, who was my youngest at the time, loved stuffed animals. And, you know, her stuffed animals had names, personalities, all sorts of things. But her favorite one was named Lisa. And so the idea kind of hit me. I wanted it to be about travel, and I wanted it to star my kids. So the concept became the kids are going to travel the world. And the stuffed animal that Holly, who's my daughter, owns, is going to be a magical one who can transform into anything to sort of aid and abet their adventures around the world. So the common theme for all of the books is that these three kids travel to a country, and the two older ones who are boys get into a little bit of mischief, and the daughter and the magical stuffed animal have to go save the day. So that was kind of the underlying theme. So, you know, me being a project manager by trade, you know, I kind of mapped out, you know, here's how I want the first couple of books to go. And the first one was Lisa Goes to England. And so the adventure really centers around the kids going to visit, you know, London and Stonehenge. And my daughter and her stuffed animal go have tea with the Queen. And while at Stonehenge, the two boys get into a bit of trouble where the younger boy is throwing a rubber ball against Stonehenge, and Stonehenge is starting to wobble, and it looks like it's going to fall over. And so my daughter and Lisa fly their way over to Stonehenge, and they save the day. So that was the first book. And, you know, I had to kind of learn my way around how to get a book, you know, put together and so forth. So
not easy, is it?
It isn't. No, you've got a lot to consider, and illustrations, of course, with it being a book tailored towards kids is, you know, one of the most critical elements of it.
What was her reaction? Well, what was the reaction of your daughter to the first book?
Oh, she loved it. Yeah, it's, the two boys are a little bit older, so I think they were, you know, less impressed than my daughter was at the time. But, you know, she would come up to me all the time with ideas about, you know, hey, what if they did this? And what if Lisa turned into this in your next book and so forth? So
I'm fascinated by the fact that you can be a project manager and at the same time be very creative on the book and album side of things. How do you juggle that plus the five kids, soon to be six, and just family life in general? How does that all work for you?
Oh, that's a great question. It's really all about you know, time management and maximizing opportunities to do things. You know, I find myself always like thinking and always sort of in, you know, as the children's books started to come out and I unlocked that creative side of myself, it just kind of stuck. And, you know, I call it kind of a left brain, right brain thing, where my right brain was dormant for a long time. And then it started to emerge. So, but yeah, that's a good question. It's a lot to juggle, but I think the passion is strong enough that, you know, if I have an idea or something creative, I'll just kind of set the time aside to do it.
Not to get into the weeds necessarily, but do you allocate an hour a day for writing, or does it vary day to day depending on all your other responsibilities, including work?
Yeah, it definitely varies from day to day. So, you know, obviously my day job takes up my day for the most part. So it's really in the evenings and sometimes in the mornings. You know, one thing about my household is I'm always the first one awake. And, you know, that's something you're kind of conditioned as you have kids that you have to get up and get them ready for school and all that stuff.
You have to get up before them so you can at least get your sanity going.
Yeah. And you know, hey, that's the quietest time of the morning. You know, if you're the first one up and, you know, you have like a, you know, an hour to, you know, have your coffee and stuff like that. So, you know, oftentimes I'll crack my computer open and, you know, just work on things, whether it's, you know, creatives or, you know, ideas, songwriting, things like that. And, you know, we have like a home studio here. So, you know, if it's something that I need to, I know this is going to take me a few hours, you know, I'll negotiate that with my wife and say, look, I'm going to go close myself off for a couple of hours and do vocals. And she completely understands because she is also a musician.
Does help.
Not children's music. So, but she understands, you know, the aesthetics that need to be in play and, you know, you kind of need that silent, you know, spot to do that.
I specialize in time mismanagement, so I have no books or albums. So you're way ahead of me on that. I want to talk about your decision to vary between books and albums. How does that work for you? In other words, you could be theoretically just producing albums or theoretically just producing books, but it's a combination of the two.
Yeah. And, you know, and for me, one kind of led to the other. So with so I have two children's book series. So the one we talked about, is called Amazing Lisa. And there's another, and that one's kind of geared towards, you know, not necessarily beginning readers, but readers that can read a little more text. So maybe, you know, ages, you know, 6 to 10. But I have another children's book series called Rhythms World. And that is geared towards beginning readers. So less text, more focus on the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And so, back in 2018, I had already put out, I think it was 4 books in the Amazing Lisa series and a couple of books in the Rhythms World series. And I decided that, because I liked putting book trailers together to advertise the books, I decided I wanted to have an original song to go along with the series. So I took my first stab at songwriting, and because I kind of met somebody who's a musician, she had wanted to work with book authors to do the very thing that I was looking to do. So her name is Annie Lynn. And so we kind of hit it off quickly and she loved this idea. And so she said, okay, go write the song and then come back to me with it. And, you know, one of my funniest songwriting stories is that I came back to her with a song that had like 8 verses. And so she told me, well, unless you want this to be Stairway to Heaven or 20 minutes long, you need to trim a few of the verses. let's pull this in a little bit. Let's keep it to 3 or 4 minutes. And so that taught me my first lesson in songwriting is don't overdo it.
You learn as you go.
Exactly.
Does it help with your experience because you're based in Las Vegas? Does it help with your contacts through project management that you can tap into some of the creative community? You mentioned obviously just one person so far, but are there others that you can tap into either for expertise suggestions or collaboration or both?
Yeah. So that's really where the podcast came into play.
Yeah. Tell us about the podcast.
Yeah. So, you know, where project management mixes in with all of this is strictly the organizational aspects of creation. So, you know, it's like, I have an idea. I know.
Wait a minute. Organized aspects of creation. That sounds very managerial.
So yeah, it's kind of one of those things you see the end goal and then you have to figure out how do I get there? So it's like, okay, I know I want to do a podcast, but how, and you know, what ultimately do I want the episodes to look like? And, after I released my first album, which was Amazing World, and Amazing World was really songs to accompany all of the books that I had released up to that point. So every song related to a book. And had met this guy at this radio station, Jump 105.3, which played, you know, kids and family music. And I kind of reached out to him because I, you know, I loved what he was doing at the station. Like, you know, hey, can I help you? Can I sponsor you? Something like that. And he came to me with the idea about putting a couple of shows together to air on Jump 105.3. So I created two shows, one around the Amazing Lisa series and another one around the Rhythms World series. And after those had aired, he said, hey, what do you think about doing a consistent weekly show? And so that's where the whole idea of the podcast came into play. And I asked him, hey, what about, you know, I interview a couple of, you know, children's musicians and, you know, piece those interviews together and create a show. And he said, well, that sounds great. So then I had to go figure out how to do that. And so, you know, I did some research on podcasting, you know, found a good, you know, platform to host it on. And then a good scheduler. And so, again, this is all the project management side of me. I wanted to get everything sort of in place and set up foundationally. And then I could reach out and actually start doing the creative piece of it. And, you know, I put it out there on Facebook in some of the Facebook communities that, hey, I have a podcast. Would anybody like to, you know, be on it? And within an hour, I had 24 appointments. So that launched the podcast, Kindy Rockstars, and I am in the midst of season 5 at this point. And that really has been my my gateway into this community, meeting so many incredibly talented children's musicians, producers, you know, just from all over the world. Yeah, I've had quite a number of people from New Zealand, Australia on the show, a couple from Africa, several in Europe, you know, Canada. And yeah, it's just been amazing getting to know them. And that has helped me to kind of build a community of expertise, of mentors. And, you know, I myself have been lucky enough to start to mentor a few as well.
Are you surprised at the reception and the popularity? I alluded to it in the beginning about the inundation of media in our culture, and the fact that not a lot of it is appropriate for kids. And yet, clearly, there's a market for it. I think there always has been a market for it, but it gets drowned out by the more dominant culture. Do you find that you're getting a response based on the fact that you're providing a product that is designed with kids in mind?
Yeah, and I think there are definitely families who seek that out. And I think the biggest misconception maybe about children's music is, you know, kind of the stuff that you always see, you know, the music that's really geared towards the very young kids. And, you know, what's your definition of a kid? You know, it's in my eyes, it's before they become an adult. So what I think has not been fully discovered yet is just some of the great music that's geared towards kids as they get to be like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, where they're getting introduced to popular music and things like that. And being able to make music that, you know, not only would those kids like, but maybe their parents would kind of like it too.
Do you run any of your music and or books past your kids to get their, not necessarily stamp of approval, but insight before it gets to the final product?
I do. Yeah. Especially with this latest album. My daughter.
Called again, Imagination Time with Patrick, and it's out on June.
Yes. Yeah. My oldest daughter is 19, and I actually ran a number of the songs past her, and it's like, tell me what you think and so forth. And, you know, she would kind of give me her feedback. And, in most cases it was very, very positive. And then my other daughter, one of my other daughters, Lyric, who is 4, I have her listen to some of the songs, and you know she likes everything. So
yeah,
somewhere in between the 4-year-old review and the 19-year-old review.
Well, I was surprised when you said that you ran it by your 19-year-old, because again, it's not necessarily a kid at that point.
Yeah.
Although there's a kid in all of us, including you, which is why you're able to write these books and produce these albums.
Yeah, exactly. And in this album, the subject matter I think aligned with some things that my 19-year-old, you know, really likes. So,
well, do you find that you're going to a certain momentum at this point where, given your background again as a project manager, you lay it all out, but do you find that because you're learning more each time, you're able to be more efficient? So your volume improves and increases year after year in terms of the output of albums and books.
Yeah, actually it has.
Not so much the creativity part, which you already have, but just the project manager part where you say, okay, how can I make this more efficient to produce this or write this or record this or distribute this?
You are exactly right. You know, you learn lessons going through the process and in the people that you meet, because, you know, a lot of people have some very key skill sets. And you mentioned production. That is a big one. The ability to do creatives, things like that. The things that you might have to put out a lot of money for in the creation of it, that, you know, really could be better spent in the marketing of it. And so that's kind of the evolution that I'm trying to make here is to make the product a little more efficiently at less cost and have a little more to, you know, put it out there and market it.
Is your wife involved at all in your operation? I'll call that rather than your business, in the sense that she helps out either editing or doing other things, either on the album or book side of things, or both?
So she contributed vocals to my first album. So there's two of the songs. But she is very much top 40 inspired, and she's got a couple songs out herself. So I know that our two styles of music don't necessarily align, but she's always there for feedback. And I always show her, like if I'm working on a music video or something, I'll have her watch that, you know, say, hey, what do you think? And the video for the first single off of Imagination Time with Patrick is called Hairless Werewolf. And that starred my daughter Lyric. So I told her, I'm going to lip sync. You do whatever in the background. And the funniest thing was, you know, we both had a wolf mask. And so for the first part of the video, she kept the mask on because I think she was a little bit shy. And then by the second verse, she was busting out dance moves. So it's funny to watch her evolve just through this 4-minute music video.
For those of our listeners, as opposed to our viewers, the ones who are just listening, not watching, Patrick is wearing a wolf mask on his face. So just want to let you all know about that. You mentioned having a studio. So are you able to produce what you want at a level that works for you as far as the albums, or do you have to go another step further in the sense of post-production, et cetera? Or are you able to do all of it in-house in a way?
Yeah, for this latest album, I was able to do it all of it in-house. But, you know, I've been trying different things with that, because I know in my first couple albums, I was nowhere near where I needed to be in production. And actually for my last album, of just me, which was Adventure Time with Patrick, I actually worked with a producer. So, you know, I recorded all the songs and we worked on them one by one, and he kind of added his production flair to it. And so that really kind of permeated the album. And it was a great experience. And, you know, he and I are definitely gonna work together again. But I really wanted to try my hat with this newest album and, you know, kind of see, you know, how far have I come with this? Because, again, key skill set to have in production and developing that producer's ear and understanding this isn't right. I need to tweak this. And it amazes me sometimes with some of the people that I've met that they'll pick something up so obscure in something, but it's enough for them that they need to fix it.
Right.
Wow. I need to develop that kind of ear. If I'm ever going to get to a level where I want to be. So that's a work in progress.
But on the other hand, you're working on your own stuff. It's different. If you were producing somebody else's material, you could have that ear or eye for it. But when you're working on your own material, sometimes you need an objective outside party to look at it and say, hey, this should go, or this should be added, or this should be tweaked.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Because I have a series of albums that are covers of 80s songs. And so I typically work with other artists on those. They're called Kindies Do the 80s. And I've released 4 volumes of that. But I always work with somebody, or, you know, I'll have a song that I just cover myself. But that gives me the opportunity to produce somebody else's, you know, vocals or something like that.
Do your kids, and this is the big test, do your kids, not necessarily the 19-year-old, but the younger ones, do your kids not necessarily take pride in what you're doing, but are willing to share with their friends what you produce?
I think they would be. My 4-year-old is not in school yet, but she will be soon. I do have a 9-year-old daughter. Her name is Rhythm. But Rhythm is, she was born prematurely and suffered some brain damage at birth because of lack of oxygen. So she is nonverbal and has cerebral palsy. But otherwise, a very, very happy child who absolutely loves music.
That's great.
And, you know, we'll play our songs. My wife will play her songs. We'll play songs from, you know, the 80s and K-pop and just anything. But she's just a music. She loves listening to it. So she is an audience for us. And if we see that it makes her happy, it's like, all right, that's my review from Rhythm.
Absolutely. And who knows, you may have another kid you call the other kid Blues. So it could be Rhythm and Blues.
Our new daughter is going to be named Harper Jade Adams.
Nice. So or you Harper, could maybe, as a nickname, call her Blues, so you have Rhythm and Blues. I still like that combination. Your wife would like that better than you because of her background with rock and roll music. So if you want to give her a shout out, if she has a website, go ahead and feel free to do it. Since
she doesn't have a website, but she does have a couple songs on Spotify. Her name is Jen Adams. And if you go on Spotify and type in Jen Adams Home, you'll find her song, and that'll lead you to some of her other ones.
Good. Now, when this album comes out, how, in addition to talking with people like me, how else do you promote the album in general, and then also very much specifically in that world that you talked about developing a whole community, including on Facebook, for people that are involved with children's music and children's books?
Yeah. Hey, so the, you know, being really, really active on social media and, you know, just finding ways to, you know, get the word out about the song. And, you know, it's everything. It's Facebook, X, TikTok, Threads, you know, basically anywhere there's an audience. You know, you look at, you know, hoping to find some new listeners by those parents who are, you know, looking to find good music for their kids to listen to and things like that. So, you know, other than that, there's a lot of music out there, and, you know, you have to find a way, you have to kind of fight to be heard. And, I think that's the, if any of us are going to have our own baby shark out there, it's a combination of, you know, talent, skill, and luck, I suppose.
Well, you have a particular segment of that whole media universe. So I think you stand a better chance than so many people competing in other areas of that media landscape. So I think that's a plus in that sense. Do you find that people are amazed that you work and live in Las Vegas? They have a lot of people still have a certain concept of what Las Vegas is. They don't necessarily associate it with, and I must apologize for my voice, I think it's allergies, but do you find that people are amazed that you live and work in Las Vegas because there's a certain concept of Las Vegas that not necessarily kid-friendly or children-friendly, and yet you're thriving here in Las Vegas?
Yeah, I think most of the people that I talk to about it, they like Las Vegas. You know, a lot of them have visited here. You know, they held the Grammys here a couple of years back when I think they couldn't be held in LA because of the pandemic. So, you know, a lot of the people in my community came here, which was great that they, you know, came to my hometown. But amazingly, there is only one other couple in Las Vegas I know of anyway, that does children's music. So whereas, you know, you've got hotspots all over the country, like Los Angeles and Austin, Texas has got a bunch of really, really great children's musicians. And then, you know, all along New England, New York, In Las Vegas, there just isn't. And I think that surprises me the most, that there aren't more people here who are putting that kind of music out.
Well, it gives you a chance to shine, though, too, because it is
Exactly.
such a
I'll
unique.
claim it as my own.
Yeah, you might as well. Are you viewed in any particular way when you do book signings and you put out as much music and books as you do? Are you looked at in a certain way from that community that you're a content producer that shines above other content producers, or that you, I don't want to say that you're considered a star in that world, but are you considered a prominent person in that world?
There's a lot of children's musicians who are or have dabbled or are dabbling in books. It feels like a natural mix. You could write a book that inspires a song. You could write a song that inspires a book. So I see a lot of my fellow children's artists that have book ideas, and they've actually reached out to me and had questions about how to. How do I get a book out there and stuff like that? So, I think we all kind of see each other as peers. I know of other children's artists who have a wide collection of children's books out there too. In a lot of cases, they're better known for their music, but then you talk to them, it's like, oh, you've got that many books out. So, I do get that kind of reaction when people who only know me for my music, they say, you've got 13 books out, really? So.
And don't forget you've won award, and you don't forget you've won awards too.
Exactly. Yeah.
So not every author or composer wins awards. That I think that helps in the long run in terms of your visibility and your production as well. So in the future, once the album comes out, what are you working on next as a project? Because I could tell you're always planning, so
Yeah,
yeah,
and
you are.
the whole next album is already in process in my mind and starting to make notes on that. But as I kind of talked about, I have this volume of 80s covers. So I got one more album in that volume to finish up. Funny story, I actually only meant to put out one volume of the Kindies Do the 80s, but so many people were interested in doing it. It just kept piling up, and eventually it's like, okay, I got to make two albums. Okay, now I got to make three. Okay, four it is. No, five. Five, that's it.
Well, one last question, which you got to ask is, with all this production, are you at least making a profit? Sort of. You're not losing money.
The long answer is no.
Oh,
Never.
okay, fair and honest. But you know what? You're loving it. So, and eventually
It
that'll
is,
reachable point.
it'll If it's meant to happen, it will happen. I think all you can do is keep plugging away and again look for that way to be efficient. And it's not like I haven't made any money, but as many artists will tell you, in the days where you have to rely on streaming and stuff like that, and you just don't get paid a lot for your music being streamed, it's got to be streamed millions of times for a profit to start to show. So you've got to be really savvy about how you. Work YouTube and get yourself monetized and stuff like that. So it's just a different world than, people who could sell a couple million CDs and you can call that a success. It's hard to say really what the success is now.
But here's the thing, it's a different world, but you're in it, which is not everybody's in it doing stuff and producing. So you got to
Yeah.
take that into consideration. Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Patrick Adams, award-winning children's author, musician, and podcaster. Patrick will release his eighth album for kids and families called Imagination Time with Patrick on June 14th. For everything about Patrick, you can go to patrickadamsbooks.com and you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, and X. And Patrick, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.